Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we return to the subject of countering the propaganda narrative about the war ongoing in the Ukraine. And there is so much, but the latest propaganda narrative that we're starting to see is this idea that Russia is responsible for global hunger.
That's a weird one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
But Americans will believe anything.
Well,
not just Americans, the Europeans. It was Chancellor Scholz that flat out said it to Putin. You know that you're responsible for feeding the world.
Yeah. Wanted to share with you a different take on that, and then there's some other counter-propaganda that we may get to as well. But we wanted to start, we thought this was a really good article at the Moon of Alabama website. Moon of Alabama is a pseudonym for a German journalist who has been really good at penetrating some of the nonsense that we're getting from the corporate media in this country.
Well, they get it there too.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's moonofalabama.org.
Yes, that's where you can find this. And this appeared last Friday, and it's entitled, No, the Ukraine War Has Not Stoked a Global Food Crisis. Russia is falsely accused of blocking Ukraine's seaports and thereby increasing a global food shortage. And then he's got a lengthy quote here from The Guardian that is typical of
the narrative. That's a UK propaganda organ.
Right, but we're getting similar stuff here.
Well, they work together. That's the thing. People think that, oh, no, well, if you go to another country's news, it's going to be different than our country's news. No. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's put out by the same people.
That's correct. So, lengthy quote here from The Guardian. The United Nations has warned that the war in Ukraine has helped to stoke a global food crisis that could last years if it goes unchecked, as the World Bank announced an additional $12 billion in funding to mitigate its devastating effects. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said shortages of grains and fertilizer caused by the war, warming temperatures, and pandemic-driven supply problems threaten to tip millions of people over the edge into food insecurity, as financial markets saw share prices fall heavily again on fears of inflation and a worldwide recession. Why they threw that in there, I don't know.
But I don't know, and it doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't, but anyway.
You know, commodity prices would go up.
Yeah.
Because that's how capitalism works. They profit off of hunger.
Right.
And shortages.
But if you can blame Russia for that too, why not throw it in there?
Just throw everything in.
Exactly. Speaking at a UN meeting in New York on global food security, Guterres said what could follow would be malnutrition, mass hunger, and famine in a crisis that could last for years, as he and others urged Russia to release Ukrainian grain exports. Before the invasion in February, Ukraine was seen as the world's breadbasket, exporting 4.5 million tons of agricultural produce per month through its ports, 12% of the planet's wheat, 15% of its corn, and half of its sunflower oil. But with the ports of Odessa, Chornomorsk, and others cut off from the world by Russian warships, the supply can travel only on congested land routes that are far less efficient.
Well, even before this all started, the United States was trying to get countries to not import Russian wheat.
Yeah.
Especially in Africa. And there's countries in Africa that are totally dependent on Russia for wheat, because they don't grow wheat themselves. I don't know why. Egypt used to, but I don't know about the sub-Saharan ones.
Right.
Anyhow,
yeah.
They are. And Americans were over there going, well, you need to starve your people so we can teach Russia a lesson.
Yeah. All right. So that ends the lengthy quote from The Guardian, and Moon of Alabama responds, it is not Russia that is withholding Ukrainian grain or cutting off its seaports. Ukraine does that all by itself. As the Russian Joint Coordination Headquarters for a Humanitarian Response in Ukraine reports, another lengthy quote here, 75 foreign vessels from 17 countries remain blocked in 7 Ukrainian ports, and then they list them. The threat of shelling and high mine danger created by official Kiev in its internal waters and territorial sea prevents vessels from safely leaving the ports and reaching the open sea. In confirmation of this, the Russian Federation is opening daily from 8 to 19, that's military time, right, Moscow time, a humanitarian corridor, which is a safe lane southwest of Ukraine's territorial sea, 80 nautical miles long and 3 nautical miles wide. Detailed information in English and Russian on the modus operandi of the maritime humanitarian corridor is broadcast daily every 15 minutes on VHF radio on 14 and 16 international channels. At the same time, the Kiev authorities continue to avoid engaging with representatives of states and ship-owning companies to resolve the issue of ensuring the safe passage of foreign vessels to the assembly area. The danger to navigation from Ukrainian mines drifting off their anchors along the coasts of Black Sea states remains. Now, Moon of Alabama writes, well, that's just Russian propaganda, you might say. But no, it is not. The International Maritime Organization has published reports about the maritime security and safety in the Black Sea and Sea of Azov. Quoting them now. At the start of the conflict, approximately 2,000 seafarers were stranded aboard 94 vessels in Ukrainian ports. 10 vessels have subsequently safely departed the Sea of Azov, and 84 merchant ships remain with nearly 450 seafarers aboard. The Council on March 10th and 11th agreed to encourage the establishment as a provisional and urgent measure of a blue safe maritime corridor to allow the safe evacuation of seafarers and ships from the high-risk and affected areas in the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov to a safe place in order to protect the life of seafarers and ensure the mobilization and commercial navigation of vessels intending to use this corridor by avoiding military attacks and protecting and securing the maritime domain. The Russian Federation has informed IMO that it had established a humanitarian corridor to provide for the safe evacuation of ships once outside the territorial waters of the Ukraine. Despite this initiative, there remain many safety and security issues which hamper access to the corridor and the ability for ships to depart from their berth in Ukrainian ports. Ukraine's ports are at MARSEC, that's Maritime Security Level 3, and remain closed for entry and exit. Sea mines have been laid in port approaches, and some port exits are blocked by sunken barges and cranes. Many ships no longer have sufficient crew on board to sail. Ukraine also provided their preconditions for the safe evacuation of ships from their ports. These include an end to hostilities, the withdrawal of troops, and ensuring the freedom of navigation in the Black Sea and Sea of Azov, including carrying out minesweeping activities with the involvement of Black Sea littoral states. They're holding them hostage, exactly. Sure, we'll release them when all hostilities end and Russia withdraws its troops. And by the way, help sweep the mines that we put there. Yeah, that's their conditions. It is absolutely insane, you know, to blame Russia for this. The MARSEC level of a port is determined by the local authorities. Ukraine is simply prohibiting ships from entering or leaving the ports it controls. It has taken these hostage and makes unreasonable demands for their release. It also has laid some 400 anchor mines around Odessa, which are so old that some of them have parted from their chains and drifted south towards Turkey. It does not allow Russia to demine the sea. Meanwhile, foreign ships that had been held by Ukraine in Mariupol have been able to leave since Russia has taken the city and its harbor. UN Secretary General Guterres certainly knows all this.
But he is a puppet. He is awful.
Yeah, he really is. That he is accusing Russia of causing a blockade only shows that he does not honor the neutrality his position demands.
That's right. He's the leader of the UN. He's supposed to represent everybody.
Yeah.
Not lie for some.
All right, not taking sides. The global food shortage has, by the way, been around since early 2021. It was not caused by the Ukraine crisis, but as an October 2021 report says, by high prices following supply chain disruptions during the pandemic. And then he's got a quote here that includes a survey by the World Bank in 48 countries talking about that and documenting this. He goes on, though, Guterres's accusations were copy-pasted from remarks U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken had made in an interview. Now quoting Blinken, Ukraine is one of the leading producers of, among other things, wheat in the world. Russia, of course, is a large producer itself. And in Ukraine, there are literally tens of millions of tons of wheat that are stuck there because Russia's blockading Ukraine's ports.
Liar.
Yeah, it's just a flat-out lie. There are about 85 ships right now with grain, wheat in them. They can't get out. There are another 22 million tons of wheat in silos near the ports that can't get there.
Because Ukraine won't let them.
So Blinken is lying about the port blockade. The Ukraine is, by the way, currently exporting wheat via railway, Danube barges, and then through the Romanian port, Constanta. That wheat, though, is likely to go to Europe. Blinken is also lying about fertilizers. And here they're quoting Blinken again. Now, the reason for that is there's also a fertilizer shortage because a lot of that is produced in the region. That means that as farmers are thinking about next year's crops, if they don't have fertilizer, the yields are going to go down. So there's going to be even less food in the market and prices go up even more. Unquote. Russia and Belarus are big fertilizer producers. Neither has been hindered to produce by the war. There is, therefore, no shortage. The only reason the U.S. and Western countries will not get fertilizer from these countries are the sanctions they have enacted against buying from them. This passage from Blinken's interview has a comical element. Question. You were in Kiev recently, about a month ago, and you said that Russia is failing, Ukraine is succeeding. What is your assessment now? And then Blinken says, that remains the case. Here's what's important. Putin's number one objective in going into Ukraine was to erase its independence, erase its sovereignty, to bring Ukraine fully back into the Russian fold, to make it part in some fashion of Russia. That's already failed.
He just made that up.
Yeah, exactly. He made that up. No one from Russia has ever said that.
No.
How would Blinken know what Putin's number one objective was or is? Has he put himself into Putin's mind? Putin himself has given the reasons for the launching of the operation in his Victory Day speech, and he's got a link to that. Ukraine's independence was never questioned in it.
No, he wanted to denazify and demilitarize and protect the people of Donbass who were being killed by the Ukrainian regime.
Right, and had declared themselves as independent republics, and he recognized that and has now undertaken the limited military operation for that purpose, and it was never about taking over Ukraine or bringing all of Ukraine into Russia or anything like that.
And if Ukraine would have followed the Minsk Accords that it agreed to 8 years ago, they wouldn't have declared their independence.
Yeah,
The Minsk Accords are about them staying part of Ukraine.
Yeah.
And for 8 years, Russia's saying, follow the Minsk Accords, follow the Minsk Accords. And finally, the Donbass people are like, you know what, we're out of here.
Yeah.
And Russia's like, okay, we'll protect you. And now everyone's screaming, Russia has to negotiate and...
Yeah.
And there's already been two negotiations that people just ignore that. The first one was in Belarus in March.
Right.
And the Ukrainians killed their own negotiator.
Yeah.
They executed him. Denis Kirov, I think his name was. And so that fell apart. Now imagine if the Russians had executed a Russian negotiator. It would be all over the mighty Wurlitzer.
Yeah.
But since the Ukrainians were the ones that executed their own negotiator, boom, goes down the memory hall. And then the second negotiations were in Turkey in April. And they came up with a tentative agreement, and Zelensky announced it. And then Boris Johnson told Zelensky, no, you cannot agree to that, right? But as part of the agreement, the Russians withdrew from Bucha. And that is when the SBU, the Ukrainian Secret Service, went into Bucha and said, we are going to cleanse it of collaborators. And they went in there and they massacred like 300-some people. And then they blamed it on the Russians, who had left 3 days before.
And there's some really good articles, by the way, at Covert Action Magazine, covertactionmagazine.org, that really goes into detail. We've, of course, spoken about the Bucha massacre and got to the truth of that several weeks ago. Now there's even more comprehensive reporting on that.
Yeah, but the thing is, it was tied to the negotiations in Turkey.
Yeah.
So, you know, in good faith, the Russians pulled out of there, and those people got killed because of it, because the UK told Zelensky, no, you cannot agree to stop the war. You have to keep it going.
Yeah, Russia has agreed to more negotiations, but they do point out that one of the things that needs to happen is Ukraine needs to stop changing its position on what exactly it is demanding. That's what
because they're taking orders doing from the United States and UK. That's why.
They don't want the negotiations to succeed.
Right. Ukraine can't have their own policies because their policies are dictated to them from their bosses.
Yeah.
And that's why they can't negotiate in good faith.
Ukraine is really a pawn here.
It really is.
Yeah. So anyway, going back to the Blinken interview, ironically, the questioner then asks Blinken, how did Putin get this so wrong? How did he miscalculate this so badly? And then Blinken says, it's very hard to put yourself in the mind of anyone else after he had just done that, right? Or supposedly
after that. Yeah, after he just said, well, Putin was thinking this and Putin was planning that. But I can't possibly put myself in his mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Then the interviewer asks, what are you hearing intelligence-wise? And then Blinken said, well, we had, of course, very good information about Russia's planned aggression in the first place, which we shared with the world. A lot of people were skeptical, and it's one of those things where, as I said, I wish we'd been wrong about it, but we were right.
Sure.
Yeah, that is so hypocritical. Moon of Alabama then writes, when during the winter of 2021, Biden warned of an imminent Russian invasion of Ukraine, he did not know what Russia's plans were, but what he did know was the Ukraine was planning, with U.S. help, for an all-out attack on the Donbas republics in February 2022.
Which is why there was 80,000 troops on the border.
Yeah.
The media slurpers, they just believe whatever their owners tell them. They never ask, well, why are there 80,000 Ukrainian troops in the Donbas anyhow?
Yeah. So Biden knew that no Russian politician could stand back when that were to happen. When you know on what date a war will start, it is, of course, easy to predict when the response to it will happen. Starting on February 16th, Ukrainian artillery attacks on Donbas increased from a few dozen per day to more than 2,000 per day, as was duly noted and reported by the OSCE Special Observer Mission. It were these artillery preparations for a full-blown attack that pushed Russia towards their preemptive operation in Ukraine. This is confirmed in a recent Russian news report about the liberation of Azovstal, that's the steel plant right there in Mariupol. Quoting the Russian news report, the Russian operation in Ukraine began against the backdrop of the situation in the Donbas that worsened in mid-February. The authorities of the DPR and LPR, those are the newly declared independent republics, reported increased shelling by Ukrainian troops, announced the evacuation of civilians in the Russian Federation, and asked for recognition of independence. On February 21st, Putin signed the relevant decrees. So again, summing up, this is Moon of Alabama summing up, there was and is a global food crisis because food has become unaffordable for some people due to the factors previously mentioned. The war in Ukraine did not cause the food crisis. Russia does not blockade Ukrainian harbors. Ukraine could export more wheat if it would allow ships to leave its harbors. Putin has not questioned the independence of Ukraine, and the reason for the war was the planned and prepared for Ukrainian attack on Donbas. Anything else said about these points is just propaganda. And indeed,
boy, do we
hear
propaganda.
Yes, we do.
And I just can't believe people would fall for it.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do you have to be lied to before you recognize, oh, I shouldn't believe these people?
Yeah, well,
I mean,
I don't know.
Talk about slow learners.
That sounds like a rhetorical question to me. But anyway, yeah. So along the same lines, we wanted to share with you, this is another very grave danger as we're on the precipice of possible nuclear conflict or direct conflict between the U.S. and Russia. Well, here's U.S. tempting fate again. This is an article that you can find at antiwar.com, and it's entitled U.S. drawing up plans to sink the Russian Black Sea fleet, says a Ukrainian official.
So first they lie and say that Russia's blockading the harbors. And then they say, well, we have to do something about that, so we're going to sink Russian ships.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the logic is amazing. We're going to make up a story, and then we're going to respond to our made-up story by increasing provocations.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we want peace.
Yeah. Shortly after Reuters published an exclusive story that the White House was looking to move advanced anti-ship missiles to Ukraine, an official in Kiev said that the U.S. is making a plan to sink Russia's Black Sea fleet.
But that explains why this propaganda is coming out right now.
Right. Ukrainian Ministry of Internal Affairs advisor Anton Gerashenko tweeted, quote, the U.S. is preparing a plan to destroy the Russian Black Sea fleet. The effective work of the Ukrainians on Russian warships convinced the U.S. to prepare a plan to unblock the Ukrainian ports. Deliveries of powerful anti-ship weapons are being discussed. Now, as we just saw from the Moon of Alabama piece, Russia is not blocking the ports in the first place, as you were just pointing out, but still, this is part of the propaganda.
Well, it's part of the propaganda. The UN says it, Ukraine says it, you know, The Guardian says it, all U.S. media says it. You know, if enough people say it, then it becomes, what is that? We're an empire now, and we create our own reality.
Yeah, yeah. Gerashenko cited the Reuters report on Washington's effort to ship Harpoon and naval strike missiles to Ukraine. The missiles have a range of up to 300 kilometers and cost $1.5 million apiece. Three U.S. officials and two congressional sources told the outlet the White House was still working out the details for sending the advanced weapons to Ukraine. Logistical issues and the possibility the U.S. would have to remove a launcher from one of its ships to send to Ukraine are current obstacles to completing the transfer. Responding to a question from Newsweek, the State Department did not deny it was working on a plan to take out the Russian fleet. Quote, as the conflict is changing, so too is our military assistance to deliver the critical capabilities Ukraine needs for today's fight as Russia's forces engage in a renewed offensive in eastern Ukraine, a spokesperson said. However, the Department of Defense issued a sharp denial of the claims made by the Ukrainians official. I can tell you definitively that that's not true, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby told reporters Thursday afternoon.
Oh, he's a liar. I've seen him in action. John Kirby?
Yeah, but it is true that the Pentagon is resisting steps to provoke an actual hot war with Russia, as opposed to...
fight to the last Ukrainian.
Yeah, exactly. So he may be telling the truth on this occasion.
Well, he's twisting it.
Yeah. The Pentagon denial applied only to the Ukrainian official's assertion the U.S. was helping sink the Black Sea Fleet and did not refer to the proposed anti-ship weapons transfer. Gerashenko said the attack would help to open up Ukraine's ports. Russia currently controls the Black Sea. Well, see, now he's fallen for the propaganda saying they're maintaining a blockade. That's not correct.
Yeah.
The UN has called for easing of restrictions in the sea to allow food exports from Ukraine to help alleviate global food shortages. Moscow has offered a diplomatic solution to the Black Sea standoff. On Thursday, the Kremlin proposed lifting the blockade in exchange for sanctions relief, meaning lifting the Ukrainian blockade.
Yeah.
The Russian Foreign Ministry said the problem goes beyond the blockade and includes Western sanctions restricting fertilizer exports. You have to not only appeal to the Russian Federation, but also look deeply at the whole complex of reasons that caused the current food crisis. Sanctions interfere with normal free trade, encompassing food products, including wheat, fertilizers, and others, according to Russian Deputy Foreign Ministry Andrei Rudenko. So that's from antiwar.com, but again, it has a little bit of disinformation in there.
Well, that he accepted.
Yeah.
Because everyone's saying it. If everyone, if The Guardian says it and BBC says it and NPR says it, well, then it must be true.
Yeah. With that, I want to turn to another aspect of this. Covert Action Magazine has been doing a really good job. They have a lot of articles that are countering the dominant narrative about the war. This is one that I had missed earlier. It's actually from late April, but I think it's really good. It's by, I think, the main editor, Jeremy Kuzmarov. It's entitled CIA Behind Secret Plots to Kidnap, Torture, and Assassinate Ukrainian Dissidents for President Zelensky, says Ukraine defector. And we're not going to get through this whole article, but I want to at least start with it. Vasily Prozorov, a former officer with the Security Services of Ukraine, or the SBU.
That's the one that murdered the negotiator.
Yeah.
Oh, and also the people in Buka.
Yep, yep.
Yes,
stated soon after his defection to Russia in 2018 that the SBU had been advised by the CIA since 2014. CIA employees who have been present in Kiev since 2014 are residing in clandestine apartments and suburban houses, he said. However, they frequently come to the SBU's central office for holding, for example, specific meetings or plotting secret operations. And then he's got a link to a video at thegrayzone.com. Prozorov's revelations take on extremely ominous implications in light of a new report by the Gray Zone Project detailing the SBU's participation in a campaign of assassination, kidnapping, and torture overseen by Ukrainian president and Western media darling Vladimir Zelensky. The campaign bears comparison with Operation Phoenix in South Vietnam, which resulted
in... because it's the same people doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Or at least their heirs and people that
yeah,
were familiar
with
that.
Yeah, the same bureaucracy, put it that way, yeah. Well, remember in Iraq in 2003, they literally dug up James Steele and the other dude, Poindexter,
right,
and sent them to Iraq. They took them out of retirement and sent them there so they could teach the death squads how to work.
Yeah, yeah, it was the same type of operation. It's a death squad operation. Operation Phoenix in South Vietnam, of course, is notorious. It resulted in the killing, imprisonment, and torture of thousands of South Vietnamese, including civilian officials accused of being loyal to the left-wing anti-imperialist National Liberation Front.
And that's how it goes. Poindexter was there, also Oliver North.
Right.
And I think James Steele got a start there, too. That's why they were all retired by Iraq, right?
Right.
But then they just, okay, we're going to teach you people. Now you people can teach, you know, each one teach one kind of thing.
Right.
We know all about torture and murder and rape and disgusting assassinations, right? Oh, we're going to teach you, and then you can carry on.
Yeah, yeah. So in the current Ukrainian case, one of the targets of the SBU death squads was the mayor of the eastern city of Kremina in the Ukrainian-controlled side of Luhansk, Vladimir Struk. On March 1st, Struk was kidnapped by men in military uniform and then shot in the heart with his tortured body displayed before the public. Struk had reportedly urged his Ukrainian colleagues to compromise and negotiate with pro-Russian officials. So there you go. That's why they're not negotiating, you know, or one reason is, you know, if you even suggest it, you risk being murdered.
Like Denis Kurov.
Yeah. Anton Gerashenko, an advisor to the Ukrainian Ministry of Internal Affairs, who we just talked about a moment ago, celebrated the mayor's murder, declaring on his Telegram page, "There is one less traitor in Ukraine." Gerashenko has compiled a blacklist of enemies of the state. It includes journalists who have been murdered by state-backed death squads, such as prominent columnist Oles Buzina, whose name had appeared in the list. As of today, 11 mayors in Ukrainian towns are missing. On March 7th, the mayor of Gostomel, Yuri Prilipko, was found murdered. Prilipko had reportedly entered in negotiations with the Russian military to organize a humanitarian corridor for the evacuation of his city's residents, a red line for Ukrainian ultranationalists who had long been in conflict with the mayor's office. The Ukrainians claim that Prilipko was killed by Russian soldiers while distributing food and medicine. But of course, this is all part of the narrative too, right? Russia has set up humanitarian corridors, but the version we always get in the Western media is that they set it up, but then they sabotaged themselves and used an excuse to kill people, et cetera, when what is actually going on is that when Ukrainians propose setting up humanitarian corridors, they end up getting themselves killed.
Well, the same thing happened in Syria. The propaganda is always the same.
Yeah, and then he actually points out in this article the case of Denis Kurov, a top member of the Ukrainian negotiating team that you already pointed out. He got murdered.
First, attacking dissenters as traitors, that's already going on in this country, too.
Yeah.
And then imprisoning them? Well, there are people who have been in prison for a year and a half in Washington, D.C. for dissent, basically, for saying they wanted the election recounted, right? So what they're doing is, first you attack people verbally, then you criminalize it, and then it ends up you murder them.
Yeah.
And imagine saying that someone's a traitor that sets up a humanitarian corridor. Traitor to who?
Yeah.
You know, if the country isn't its people, then what is it? Traitor to the Nazis is what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, he points out here, and we're about out of time, but he points out here that Zelensky invoked martial law to ban opposition parties, but he left the pro-Nazi parties like the Azov National Corps untouched. His principal political rival, Viktor Medvedchuk, was arrested and apparently had been beaten by SBU goons.
They've
got pictures of that. Yeah.
It looks like it.
And he goes on and talks about, he quotes Douglas Valentine, an expert on the Phoenix program and the parallels there. And there's a lot more that's in this article, but we're going to have to leave it there. Again, you can find it at Covert Action Magazine. I believe it's Covert Action Magazine, all one word, .org, or maybe it's .com. Anyway, look up Covert Action Magazine, you'll find it. and it's titled CIA Behind Secret Plots to Kidnap, Torture, and Assassinate Ukrainian Dissidents for President Zelensky. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.